Who doesn't love a good hang? Somebody you can hang out with, somebody you feel a kinship with, someone on the same page as you. I have been very lucky over the years to have a keen sense of radar when it comes to sussing people out for hanging out. A lot of the time, you may know somebody who likes the same things you do, the same books, the same bands, the same movies, but there's that indecipherable trait about them that prohibits the two of you from breaching the final level and becoming very good friends. Then there are people who you meet in passing, periodically, as acquaintance. And almost immediately, you two know you're cut from the same cloth. You might see each other once in a blue moon, and yet when you do, it's always a good time. As I get older, moments with people like this are very rare, few and far between. It's the reason why I get unfairly tagged by our crew as unsocial, opting to hang out in our dressing room or my hotel room, rather than actually hanging out a lot of the time. But when you meet someone like Jim Rhoda, it's enough to lure me out of my hermetic state and unfurl my furrowed brow. Jim Rhoda is the singer and guitarist in the mighty rock band Fireball Ministry. Their albums have taken them around the world, and it could be said that our two bands can be categorized in the same genre. When we met, almost 10 years ago, when Fireball Ministry was on tour with Opeth, it was through Jason Diamond, co-director of our video trilogy, The Ballad of Danko Jones, and on that tour specifically, bassist in Fireball Ministry. Jason's another guy who can spark endless discussion, and was a good person to introduce the two of us, since Jim's onstage persona can be taken as intimidating, menacing, to say the least. Last time we played Los Angeles, Fireball Ministry graciously played with us. We've tried to get them to come out on tour, but their extracurricular, non-Fireball activities didn't make it easy for them to do so at the time. In Jim's case, now we know why. When Jim isn't on stage playing rock music, he's busy in all three media streams, film, television, and even radio. Even more impressive is when you look on his CV and see to what capacity. Jim produced the incredible Dave Grohl documentary, Sound City. If you haven't seen it yet, I suggest you do so immediately. Well, but first, listen to this episode. On paper, a documentary on a recording studio doesn't sound all that interesting, but the film manages to delve into the importance it played in the popular music we all know and love. Told from Grohl's point of view, Sound City is intimate and gripping. Furthermore, the Foo Fighters have a new television series on HBO called Sonic Highways. Jim produced that as well, as you will soon hear. And finally, he has the esteemed post of co-host to Nikki Sixx on Nikki Sixx's Sixth Sense syndicated radio show. Basically, dude's living the dream. Well, at least from my vantage point he is, and deservedly so. As you will hear, Jim has an infectious charm that makes one want to hang out and talk to the guy. It's the reason why I just emailed him and said, hey, we should do a podcast, sensing he'd be able to keep the ball bouncing. To Jim's credit, it was 8 a.m. Los Angeles time to my cozy 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time when we did this episode, and it just goes to show you just how much Jim is a real trooper. In other related news, Fireball Ministry will be on Motorhead's Motorboat Cruise this September 22nd to 26th, featuring, of course, Motorhead, but also Megadeth, Anthrax, Zakk Wylde, Testament, High on Fire, Jim Brewer, and us. So it'll be pretty cool to hang with Jim there as well. Thanks again to Skullcandy Headphones, thanks as always, thanks to Blue Mic Microphones, and thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast. Jim Rhoda, I'm just going to describe him as Hard Rocker. Hard Rocker Jim Rhoda is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flynn and Guinness, Danko's go out down low for free. I'm Zach Lennon, I do sometimes. Damn it, from fucked up. Stop playing, hang down, down. I know that disco and rock and roll aren't supposed to mix, and we all know how great a rock guitarist Danko is, but when I accompanied him one night to a disco nightclub,
I watched in awe as Danko tore up the dance floor. He was like Danny Terrio, John Travolta, and Adrian Zemed all rolled into one. When he was finished dancing, the music stopped and everyone applauded. The two of us immediately left the club and ended up in a blues bar where I watched Danko jam on CCR and Chuck Berry covers till dawn. It was amazing.
Get ready for the hottest podcast on the net. It's the official Danko Jones podcast. Here's your host, Danko Jones.
Hello.
Hey, man.
Hey, Jim. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Been traveling a lot with this Dave Grohl TV series.
That's right. Is it a Dave Grohl thing or a Foo Fighters thing?
It's a Foo Fighters thing. I should actually correct myself for saying that. It's a Foo Fighters show. I mean, honestly, it's a kind of a cool thing because it could be any band that really would want to do something like this. It's chronicling them making their new record, but in like a different city in America for each song.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And kind of like, drawing from the inspiration of each city. Yeah. I mean, bands normally who go, you know, from touring when you go to a city, what do you spend there? You spend, you know, maybe 8 hours total. Mm-hmm. And then you take off and that's it. And it's like, okay, yeah, you got me. You might have your favorite bar, your favorite restaurant or something, but you're never really, you know, immersed in whatever that city, you know, is all about. And, you know, all these different cities have this crazy cultural influence, you know, on the people that live there. And that, you know, obviously soaks into the music, too. So, you know, it's just a really, really cool. It's you know, like part history lesson, part, you know, seeing how the sausage is made, you know, part journey. Really, really cool. A really cool idea that they came up with to make their, you know, eighth album on their 20th anniversary.
What cities are we talking about? Major cities?
Yeah, it's New York, New Orleans, Austin, L.A. They went out to Joshua Tree, to Dave Catching's place.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really cool. Chicago, D.C., I'm trying to think. It is early out here. There's two more, but I can't think of them right now.
And you were with them for every stop?
Yeah, John Ramsey and I, who produced Dave's movie Sound City, at the end of Sound City, Dave had written, I don't know if you saw Sound City, but
I did. Yeah, it was Dave, great.
Oh, thanks. Dave had written his outline, because he had never directed anything before, but he had written out, you know, when he told me that he wanted to make the movie, you know, I said, well, you know, directing is just like telling a story. So just, you know, you know, you're a good storyteller, so you'll probably be a good director. And he basically went home and took a sketchbook, you know, an artist's sketchbook, and he wrote out like a 7-page outline of how he wanted the movie to play out. And that's pretty much exactly what we followed for that movie. And at the end of Sound City, when we were at Sundance, John and I, you know, handed him a blank sketchbook and said, okay, get started on the next one. And sure enough, that's when he came up with the idea of this like 8-city show. So
is he directing this?
Yeah. He's directing every episode.
So he's directing every episode while he's recording an album.
Correct.
How do you do that and stay focused?
I don't know how, if you've ever met him or know him, but the amount of energy and the amount of half the time I think he just piles things on himself to see if he could do it. Mm-hmm. And then he ends up eventually doing it because he's not really good at failing. So he just, I don't know, he's superhuman.
That's amazing. Is there a producer attached to the album?
Yeah, Butch Vig.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Butch Vig's producing the record and James Brown is engineering it. They're the same guys that did Wasting Light.
And so obviously those guys are traveling with you guys who are traveling with the band.
Yeah. And there was an 11-person film crew. We just wrapped our last city. But yeah, it was pretty wild. You know, we just kind of rolled into town. Some of the places we went didn't even have studios, because that was the other thing, is that he wanted to kind of go to different places that were kind of off the beaten path. So in New Orleans, for example, we went to Preservation Hall, which is just, you know, a room basically that was late 1700s. So, you know, they had to bring the studio there. And of course, you know, they do everything now to 2-inch. So I don't know, you could probably guess the logistics of moving a band's gear and 2 2-inch machines around the country. So pretty big undertaking to make a record.
Holy. So they do everything to 2-inch tape.
Yeah. Yeah. That's ever since Wasting Light. That's their process.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. And as you mentioned, you produced Sound City, which by now, I mean, anybody listening to this podcast should be at least familiar with the movie. How did you become the producer of that movie?
I met Dave through Nick Raskulinek, who you worked with, mm-hmm. in about around 1999 or 2000. And Nick was working with our band Fireball Ministry and had just gotten hooked up with the Foo Fighters, and he kept saying to me, like, "Oh, you got to meet Dave. You got to meet Dave. He's, you know, he's one of us. He's one of us." And you know, sure enough, I went to a barbecue one night at Dave's, and you know, it was just you know, music was on, and I remember after talking to him for a little while, Achilles' Last Stand by Zeppelin came on. And he was standing next to me, and he was air drumming to Achilles' Last Stand. And every time, like, a big fill would come up, he'd tap me on the arm, and then he'd play the fill, like, you know, in the air, but, like, to perfection. And I realized, like, oh, yeah, you're a dork like us.
Mm-hmm.
So that was how we met. And then years later, I'd been working a bit in the film business and on the technical side, and when Dave bought the console from Sound City, he asked me to bring a camera crew out to just film the moving of the console. So we brought a camera crew out, and we, you know, filmed it, and while we were there, I could always already see the wheels kind of turning in his head. And by the time we left the studio, he called me and said, "Hey, I want to make a web series about all the people that have recorded out here at Sound City." And I was like, okay. I was like, we could do that. Sure. I'll help. And then by maybe the next night, he was like, "I think we need to make a movie about the studio and, you know, how I bought the board and get as many people back to record together who recorded out there." And that was basically how it happened. And I called my friend John Ramsey, who I've known since 10th grade. And he's got a production company out here. And I was like, "Hey, look, Dave Grohl wants to make a feature. Are you in?" And he was like, "Yeah, hell yeah." So we put it together, and there it was.
It's interesting. You talk about how you became a producer and you're, fielding these ideas from Dave. I don't got Nirvana Foo Fighter money, but if you remember, and this is before I was fully aware how involved you were with Sound City, mm-hmm. on Twitter, I tagged you, Jason, and Josh Diamond, the Diamond Brothers.
Yeah.
And I said, because I had just finished watching a whole bunch of web episodes of Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Right.
And we both have, as mutual friends, the Diamond Brothers.
Yes.
And I end up having these discussions with them whenever I see them. And you know, and the times that we've been around each other, yeah, it's very similar.
Yes.
So I thought, and because you guys knew each other and I knew you guys, I said, dudes, on Twitter, I mean, it's, you could find it on Twitter, but I said, let's do musicians talking about Metallica eating pizza. And all you guys were in. And that was like almost 2 years ago.
I know. This stuff's been taking up a lot of my time, but I gotta say, I'm consider me still 100% on board because I have a good friend named Andrew Leckel, who I actually on the side just started producing records with, and he worked on a lot of the Fireball Ministry stuff too, and he and I are super tight, and we have a thing every morning that when I'm on my way to wherever I'm going, I call him and we talk about Kiss for the amount of time that I'm in the car. And we call it Kiss Calls with a K. Understand, this is for nobody. This is just,
yeah,
it's a title given to a phone call that happens pretty much daily, where we just wrap up like what they posted on their individual Instagrams,
like Paul's latest Starbucks order.
See, exactly. That will easily be a conversation on Kiss Call. So, yeah, my wife, you know, I think my wife would reconsider her entire life choice if she ever.
If she knew ahead of time.
Yeah, exactly. She just couldn't see that happening.
Yeah, because I mean, we'd have these, you know, because those guys and us, we've worked together, and no matter what you're doing, no matter what project it is, there's always downtime.
Mm-hmm.
What do you talk about in downtime? Well, you talk about Metallica. Kiss is an easy substitute. I can go either way on those two.
Right. The thing is that you know, like, you can call it, you know, musicians talking about Metallica eating pizza, but Metallica is a great, you know, it's a great just nucleus from which to just expand outward. You know, like the conversations can be endless.
Oh, yeah. We can go into other bands and go on and on. But I had no idea of your producer status when I pitched it. And here I am pitching it to a producer.
See, yeah, look at that.
Look at this.
We can go raise some money, get a sponsor. We can do the whole thing.
But then I realized Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, all the words start with the letter C. So musicians talking about Metallica, the food choice would have to be in something that starts with M.
Right, which...
It's not pizza. Muffins?
Yeah, muffins is good. Mangoes?
Mangoes?
We can find something.
Marshmallows?
Yeah, so many.
But yeah, I mean, we just go on and on. And I think most of the times we would agree. I would agree with those guys. But then there's those times where I think we kind of veer off. And that's when it gets good.
Yeah, and those guys are kind of like a collective brain. So they're two people, but they're kind of one.
Yeah,
you know, being identical twins, it makes for an interesting dynamic, because they could, you know, focus the brain power of two human beings onto us. You know what I mean? Like, we'd have to just be careful. It would keep us on our toes. That's all.
Definitely. Yeah, I thought it would be an interesting idea to do. But you also, like, I mean, you mentioned Fireball Ministry, and you are the singer, lead singer, guitar player in that band. You guys have put out, what, 5 albums?
Oh, yeah, 4 full-lengths and an EP.
But as we started the discussion and your kind of film and television credentials, you're like, I don't know how you do. I've even talked, me and the Diamonds have had our own discussions about you, and what I said was like, how does he do it? Like, I walked in to a radio station in LA, and I'm super pumped to meet my childhood hero, Nikki Sixx. And I walk into the studio and I'm kind of nervous, and I've been thinking about this moment for the last week or two. And then I turn around and you're like, hey,
I'm like, what? What's hey, up?
Yeah, what's up? And then you sit down and you're like, yeah, I'm on the show. Oh, what? it put me at ease, definitely, at a moment where I was like kind of super nervous to meet this guy.
That's awesome.
But how did you hook up with Nikki Sixx and be on his Sixth Sense radio show? It's amazing.
Well, yeah, he was dating a friend of mine, and we met, and then basically, again, like in my life, no matter what the situation, no matter who it is, you know, how bright the star shines, or how, you know, or how there's no star at all, everybody I know that I hold dear has some kind of, you know, relationship with music. And again, I met Nikki the first night, and I talked to him about T-Rex, the Suite, Slade, Mott the Hoople, how basically he got his entire like early stage look from Pete Way from UFO. Like, it was basically just like, oh, you're my best friend. You know, like you had that moment where you're like, yeah. Oh, I can talk to you for the next 2 weeks, probably not stop talking. And then at the end of 2 weeks, we'd just be like, oh, hey, should we get something to eat?
Wow.
So that was basically, again, that was it. And then he had the show, and he was like, oh, come on. So I used to go on and just like when, before the Sound City thing, and, you know, really got heavy, and before this new show, Sonic Highways, got really heavy, I used to try to go on once a week, because ironically, or coincidentally rather, our post-production office is like around the corner from the radio station. So I'd hit him up, he'd hit me up, he'd be like, what are you doing today? And I'd be like, oh, I'm at the office. He'd be like, oh, come be on the show. And then it just so happened that one day you were there.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So it was an open door. It was like, you just show up if you want.
Yeah. I gotta get back into that habit, because it's really fun to sit there. Because
you realize what you just said to me.
Yeah, yeah.
You
yeah.
said, oh, yeah, I gotta, yeah, I gotta, I should do that thing with Nikki. That's insane.
And as you know, because you've done enough, you know, you've dedicated enough of your life to this. When you meet the people that like you admired when you were younger, you get really worried that they're going to be, you know, they're people, you know, people have their, everybody, all of us have our, you know, our, flaws and our, you know, our goods and our bad, our good and our bad. And Nikki is just one of those people that you meet him and you're like, wow, you not only live up to every expectation, but you exceed them. He's just such a good guy.
I've met him that time, and then another time I met him when Bride to Destruction played Download and we were playing. And both times, man, the first time I met him, he was so nice. I thought he was just in a good mood, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just happy to get him in a good mood. And then the second time with you, I was actually so glad to see you, and, you know, we knew each other.
Yeah.
Because I'd be like, oh, yeah, okay, well, now Nikki will like me because I know his bud. So I was just totally – and he is, man. He was so off the mic, like offline. Like that dude is – I mean, I've never said this, but after the show, he whipped out his card, wrote his phone number on the back of the card, like his private number. He goes – call me the next time you're in LA.
Yeah.
You didn't have to do that.
Yeah, totally.
And you got
to do it too. Like that's the thing, because I hope you have.
I didn't. I'm never going to call that number, man.
See, that's the thing. And let me tell you something. And I'll tell you this. This is my one rule of meeting the people that we admire. When we Fireball Ministry did a tour with Dio in 2005, I think, and it was amazing, and Ronnie was incredible, and he was like the most gracious and nicest human being like you've ever met in your life. And at the end of the tour, he did the same thing to me, where he gave me his number and he's like, hey, we both live in LA, like hit me up anytime, we can go get, like, let's go get a meal or, you know, whatever. And I only ever called him one time. I used to call him if we were playing in town. I'd invite him out to come see us every time, and he'd always call me back or send me a message and say, "Hey man, thanks for the invite. I can't make it." But I never followed up with like going out for dinner or doing anything like that. And then, you know, the inevitable happened and I'll never get the chance again. So I made a pact with myself that day. Like if anybody ever gives me their phone number like that, I'm totally going to hit him up because, you know, it's too short and you never know. Cause like you said, he doesn't have to do that.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to call him then.
Hell yeah, dude.
Hey, Rhoda said,
"You want to get some sushi?" Yeah. No, it'll be great.
Yeah, but then when we sit down and I'm looking at him, I'll be like, "Dude, Shout at the Devil is so cool, man." That's it.
Dude, I do it all the time. I'll be driving in my car and I'll text him like, "Hey, where did you guys track Shout at the Devil?" Or no, like, "Where did you guys track the first record?" And he'll write back, "In hell."
Fuck.
And I'll be like, "Come on, I'm like, come on, man. I really want to know. Where did you track the record?" And he'll write back, "I don't remember." And you're like, "Come on, dude." But then he'll get into it. The other thing he always does that rules is that you're going to love this so much, dude. Like he'll go to get on a plane, like he'll be leaving, you know, like leaving town or something, and he'll be like, "Hey man, just wanted to let you know I'm getting on the plane. If anything happens and the plane goes down, the Looks That Kill booths are in my garage."
Oh, that is amazing. Yeah,
you're like, holy shit. Or he'll be like, "Dude, I'm getting on the plane right now. I just want you to know that if anything goes down, if the plane goes down, the stripy suit from the Theater of Pain tour is in my hall closet, and it's yours."
Oh man, that's amazing.
Yeah. Okay. So now are you gonna call him?
Fuck. Well, what do I want?
Exactly. This is incredible. He's the best. He's the best.
You ever text him going, "Hey, did the plane land okay?" And he goes, "Yeah, I'm here."
I'm like, "Damn it.
Can I still just go into the hallway?"
Yeah, grab the outfit.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he's again, like I said, like I never would have dreamed, you know, like I had this one moment where we were cruising, I was out with him and he met me at the Rainbow. He was going somewhere and I was going somewhere and we were texting. I'm like, "Hey, where are you?" And he goes, "Oh, I have to go to this thing, you know, over here." And I was like, "Oh, I'm at the Rainbow." And he was like, "Oh, cool." He goes, "I'll meet you there." And I remember he, like, right when he walked into the hallway, like the front, you know, that foyer in the Rainbow, he got a text and he had to take off.
Oh.
And I remember thinking to myself, like, That must be like, I can't even imagine what it's like to be him and walk through the door of that place.
Yeah.
Because, man, the things that must have gone on.
Wow. I mean, wow. Like, what's going through your mind, though, sitting there waiting for Nikki Sixx to meet you at the Rainbow Bar and Grill?
That's like, weird. Sometimes you put everything into perspective. It's pretty awesome. I've been really, really lucky in my life with stuff like that, and you know, I always just remember, you know, you got to remember that, you know, it's aside from being talented and aside from, you know, having, you know, accomplishing something that people, you know, latch onto and influences a whole, you know, millions of people, you know, it's, you're pulling the arm on the slot machine. You know what I mean? Like anybody mm-hmm. is. And yeah. It's like when you actually hit the jackpot and you have that level of influence over people, it's even greater when you're a great person.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what makes, you know, me, you know, like to know a guy like Nikki or even Dave, it's just like, you know, those guys are they're just great people. So it doesn't matter like what all the other stuff. It's just, I'm just glad to have met some pretty great people that have, I can also look up to and, you know, respect, you know, in such a way, whether it's them or Ronnie or whoever.
You know, I mean, of course, Dave Grohl is who he is. I mean, it goes without saying, but for me, Nikki Sixx, I mean, you know, he was
other level stuff.
Yeah, just because of the time, the impressionable time when I discovered what he was doing.
Yeah.
And I remember the morning of the Sixth Sense show when I was going to go down there. I think I tweeted about it, and he tweeted me back, and he said, "See you there, fucker." And I screenshot it, and I fucking sent it to everyone I knew. And then someone else had done the same thing and sent it to me. Mm-hmm. And we were like, can you fucking believe this is fucking crazy? I think I mean, I did that Motley Crue movie when I was 11. And and then I wrote about it for the Huffington Post, and I tweeted Nikki again, and he tweeted me back. The second tweet still is sweet, but second tweet, I'm like, hey, yeah, it's Nikki.
That's right.
We're buds. Yeah. I mean,
My friend Nikki.
Yeah, my friend. Hey, Nikki's just.
You know, like the thing about that time, you know, and those bands, you know, I always say that to me is a little bit, it's a little bit different. The reason why I think it appealed to us when we were younger is like, they were so dangerous. Like to think about any of those guys, like, over to your parents' house, you know, like when you were like 13, and like if you could imagine, you know, like not that Nirvana isn't, you know, an influential band and a huge band, but like they seemed like nice guys.
Yeah,
like they seemed like okay dudes that like, hey man, come over. Like, oh, you guys are on tour? Yeah, my mom will make you some ZD. Like, come hang out. Like, there's no way.
Yeah.
You wanted like 1983 Motley Crue to come to your parents' house.
Especially like I know that you read Hit Parader and Circus magazine.
Oh yeah.
And the shit they were saying in those magazines, it wasn't true, but it was just making the fantasy bigger than it was. I was scared to shout at the devil, scared the living hell out of me. And I loved it. I loved it. And Nikki, you know, it's so great. It's Nikki Sixx out of the four of them, because he was the guy I was like, wow, he looks like the coolest, scariest guy in the world. Oh, he's not the singer. Oh,
I know. I talk about that with other people all the time. Like the only band where the bass player is the coolest guy. Like,
yeah.
What name the other band where that happened?
No, like in Kiss, you can go to Paul and go, yeah, Paul's the front guy. Yeah.
Or Ace, even Ace, like you could be like, oh, I'm into the dark horse. He's a badass.
Right.
But like, yeah, Gene, I mean, you know, Gene's easy because he's spitting blood and fire. Like that's an easy, you know, like that's an easy sell to a kid. But like to just be like the bass player in a band with essentially four equal dudes and be the coolest one, it's pretty weird.
From the beginning when you saw them, but even when they kind of like, you know, kind of soften their image up, mm-hmm. and I would see Nikki doing interviews, I'm like, he's still the coolest guy, just the way he talked and the way he carried mm-hmm. himself. Not so much with Gene when I'd hear him talk. It's kind of like a school teacher telling you what to do.
Yeah. Hey, but I honestly think because Nikki's like place that he comes from is music. Like he comes straight from like, it's from music to his mouth. Like all his motivation comes from his love of music. Cause dude, I'm telling you, he goes deep, man.
Oh, that's so
like
amazing.
He goes deep. He goes like, you know, like Paris, you know, the Bob Welch band, Paris. Like that's how deep Nikki is.
Why doesn't he let that flag fly a little?
Dude, bigger. I tell him, we got get on him, because I tell him all the time. I'm like, why don't we write some songs that sound like UFO? And he's like, nobody wants to hear that. Nobody wants to hear that. I'm like, you're crazy,
Nikki. I mean, I'm going to post this. I'm keeping this part just for him to hear. There's a whole genre of music of bands who are trying to do all that stuff now.
I know.
And to get the guy from Motley Crue to outdo everybody and know more about it than...
Exactly.
That's a big middle finger to every fucking music so-called expert, newbie fucking hipster.
Yeah, he's 100%, man. He's he knows it all.
That's amazing. And it makes me feel good that I placed my chips on the right person right off the top.
Totally.
Hit it out of the park right on the first swing.
Oh, man.
Oh. But getting back to Fireball Ministry, you guys are, what is the state of it? Because we're playing a show together.
Yeah, it's hard because everybody's, you know how it goes. Like, you get older, you have kids, you want to be home, and then, these opportunities come up, like all this stuff I've been doing with Dave and John, and it's hard to kind of balance everything. And then last year I produced this record for this band called King, and that took up a bunch of time. And now I'm going to do this record for this band called Huntress. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to produce that record this year. So it's like Fireball, I love doing it, but everybody's just kind of been so busy in their worlds that it's tough. But having said that, when Motorhead decides to put together a cruise ship and they ask you to play on it with, you guys and Down and Megadeth and Anthrax and Testament, you're kind of, and High on Fire, you're kind of like, yeah, okay, well, yeah, we'll go do that. So yeah, hold on, let me clear the schedule a little bit, we'll come do that. So yeah, well, I just feel lucky to have been asked to come and play it. So it's kind of like this, working vacation for us. I mean, it's going to be awesome.
Now, if Fireball Ministry doesn't move forward fast enough, there's always Company Band. That's another band you're in.
Yeah, that's a tough one too. It's like, we couldn't pick the worst people to put something together with because of, especially Neil Fallon from Clutch's schedule. He's real he's a very busy guy. I don't think anyone tours as much as him. And now Jess, the drummer's got this new project going with his brother
Fuckface.
Fuckface Unstoppable. Yeah, so they're real busy. So,
yeah, me and Jess are Instagram buddies.
Yeah, he's the best. That's one of the best people on earth.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he's really, really. I'll always, in my life, I'll always do something with Jess. He's a great, great guy.
He's it was funny because we found each other on Instagram. We started liking each other's pics. Mm-hmm. I was on tour. We were going to play a show in Norway. I'm at the airport. There he is. I'm like, I just liked your picture 8 hours ago.
Probably like having a Bloody Mary at the bar. the happiest guy on earth. Yeah, he's that right there is some of the greatest energy ever held up by two legs, man. He's a great guy.
Yeah, we played with CKY a few years back. At a couple of festivals. That's where I met him. He was a really nice guy. And last time I saw him, I think, was in the States when we were touring last year in the summer.
Yeah, he's the best.
Yeah, he's great. His Instagram posts are hilarious. And this Company Band, so same situation then as Fireball. Everyone's super busy.
Yeah, you get to that point where it's just... It's hard. You got to kind of pick and choose. And honestly, the Zen for me was really doing that King record last year. Cause it's right. A really, easy way to be in the creative process without having to leave home and be gone so much and miss out on what's going on here. So I really kind of wanted to get into doing, more of that stuff because I really enjoy it, and that's that's what it's all about. It's making people's passion happen. When it comes to music, it's I love when coming to being a part of that creative process and making like, you know, building something, you know, from the ground up. I mean, like, making a record is, you know, one of the greatest gifts that I think that we're ever given. You know, it's like you're able to see your dream, you know, like morph into this reality of something awesome. And that part never gets old, you know, like that.
Totally. I agree 100%. But you're doing like it from both streams, producing records and movies and TV shows now. It's incredible.
You know, when you say it out loud, it sounds very stressful.
Some people call themselves producers, but like you are the ultimate. You took that word to the ultimate level.
Yeah, I've been very lucky. Like, I've been very lucky to have, you know, to be, you know, friends with extremely creative and talented people who, you know, want to work with me. And I'm very appreciative of that fact, you know, constantly, you know, or every day. I wake up every day and I know how lucky I am that, like, I get to go on interviews where we, you know, we get to talk to George Porter from the Meters and, you know,
and Rick Springfield.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like it's the craziest gamut going, you know. Sitting down with Tom Petty for 2 hours, you know, and getting to hear him talk about, you know, why he decided to do the same thing that we decided to do. That's a pretty good day at work.
Now I can't bring up Sound City without asking you, and this is knowing you were part of that project. Kind of makes more sense to me now, and I am so appreciative of it, that Stephen Piercy and Warren DeMartini were part of that Sound City kind of jam project.
Yes.
Was that you? Was that a lot of it? Was you?
You know, honest to God, Dave is like he's very laser guided. Like when he has a vision and he has a focus, he definitely, you know, he knows what he wants and he's like that. That's usually that's the course that we stay on. I will say he wanted to interview those guys as much as I did.
Amazing.
Which was awesome.
That's amazing.
And it was funny because, you know, a lot of the stuff that they told us was like stuff that you can't really, you know, like, you can imagine. I mean, like that's the thing about that time in music. Like, yeah, you know, like they hyped it up to some degree, but not that much.
No.
You know, like the stuff that went on at that period was definitely excess. And, you know, let's just say we weren't making that kind of movie. So,
well, that's awesome. You know, after making the albums and writing the songs and playing shows, that's the part, that's why I continue to want to be in the music biz, is to hear those stories from those times.
Totally.
People don't realize that because now, like you said, it's you know, things are safer now and have been done to death. But those guys, what they were doing, that's the fucking shit, man.
Yeah, and I know, you know, we talk about this all the time, you know, like, you know, I talk about it with Dave all the time and you know, like with, you know, John and Emily from our band, it's like there will be something, like something will surface, you know, like eventually everything will come together, you know, it will come to critical mass. And right now out there in this world, there are kids picking up instruments for the first time. You know, regardless of how many iPads and, you know, Xboxes are in the universe, like there is a kid discovering, like, if I plug this cord into here and then into there and I turn it up as loud as I can, I'm going to be heard, you know? And like, that's what it's all about, is that like realization, like I can't, like, you know, what's funny is that we interviewed Lars Ulrich for the Sound City movie. And, you know, Lars gets a bum rap, like he, you know, constantly, I feel like that band is in the crosshairs more than any band, you know, like, it's crazy. But Lars sat down and he said one of the coolest things. He said that when Metallica first got into their rehearsal room and the guys all sat down and they got Cliff in the band and they started to play he said instantly he knew that the power created in that room by those four guys could level the entire universe. And like, that's the moment. Like, we've all, anyone who's ever in a band and ever like feels the thing, that's the thing that you feel. You just feel that minute, that moment when everybody's kind of eyes look at each other and you're like, holy shit, what just happened?
Yeah.
And that you can't, that you're never going to get that experience with anything else. You know what I mean? Like, there won't, like, until you do that,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And when you do, then you got the sickness. You're screwed forever.
True. No, I know the moment. I know that moment.
Yeah.
Like when you write, maybe you write a song in 5 minutes and you look at each other and you're just like, the moment people hear this,
yeah,
they're going to shit their pants.
Yeah. It's the best. That's yeah. the best. That's the best thing. Like yeah. that's, and the best part of that is that anybody can do that. Like it's not like you're not special, you know, you're not born special that,
yeah.
oh no, I could never do it. Like the Guitar Center door is open to you too. Walk in there and go to fucking town. Like get crazy. So that at least that's how I feel about it.